the story of my life. No respect. I don't get no respect at all. The story of my life. No respect. I don't get no respect at all.
They couldn't score and fell flat, and the 40-shot on goal is a little deceiving. Yeah. And even though they had some really good opportunities, surprisingly, they need to play with that intensity. If those last 3-4 minutes, the Rangers sometimes don't play at their best level against lower-tier teams.
Here's Johnny!
Nope, this is Ranger Proud, the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud, here on the Bleed Blue Show.
Yep, we got a post-game. The Blue Shirts up 2-0 on the Washington Capitals. BleedBlueShow.com. Well, the Bleed Blue Show on the Facebook fan page, IG, of course, and Twitter. You know, what a fun game to watch tonight. The Blue Shirts up 2-0. We'll talk about it, get the guys on. But from a bigger level, and I think a lot of the stakeholders that are a part of this platform, when I mean as far as the callers who share their thoughts and their knowledge and the listeners that follow that are associated with the platform, the fact that both the teams at the Garden, the Knicks and the Rangers, both up 2-0 in a matter of back-to-back nights, inciting games, back-to-back nights. We'll talk about the basketball tomorrow, and then also on the Thursday, follow the NFL draft with Chris. Shout out to those guys on the Big Blue Roundtable. But let's talk some hockey, man. Let's talk some hockey. There's a lot of talks on the hockey, a lot of things to be happy about with the Blue Shirts. A lot of penalties, but let's bring everybody on. Let's bring on Glenn and Carl. But Glenn, just say a quick hello, bro. Hope all is well. Just say a quick hello. I'll come right back to you. I promise. How you doing, man? How's everything?
I'm doing great after the game tonight. Like you said, a very entertaining game. I don't have the playoff jitters, really. I guess maybe I'm like a little too overconfident, but it got a little hairy at the end. So, you know, maybe I better dig in and, get the nerves up for Saturday or Sunday's game or Friday's game.
Right. Shout outs to – I know, good points, right? Let's go to Carl. What's up, Carl? How you doing, man? Your Rangers up 2-0. How you doing, man?
Hey, a pleasant good evening, gentlemen. Two games down, two games to go. That game kind of annoyed me, but you know what? Hey, we'll take it and move on to Friday.
All right, cool. Go to Glenn. And listen, I thought they did what they needed to do, to, you know, secure home ice. They responded well after being down 1-0. They responded really real quick after the Trocheck goal. But I thought, you know, it was really an interesting game with Panarin getting physical with T.J. Oshie, of course, Tom Wilson and Will Cooley. But as far as execution, I thought the Rangers actually left some goals on the table tonight. But nonetheless, they did what they needed to do, and now they go down to D.C. Up 2-0. Glenn, I don't think we could be – I look at everything from a Knicks, Giant, Yankee, Ranger perspective, Glenn. So when it comes to the Knicks and the Rangers, I mean, this is 1994. I think everybody's been saying it, and rightfully so, because all the comparisons, man. Like 2-0, top seed in the East. How do you feel, Glenn, after, you know, defending home ice? Then we'll go to Carl.
Well, you know, I think you put it the right way, Steve. They did what they had to do. You got to hand it to the Caps a little bit. You know, they've tried to agitate, they've tried to press, they've tried to do what they have to do against the Rangers. But I mean, I think the Rangers, for the most part, even when Washington was pressing, the Rangers really didn't get back on their heels or anything. I'm interested to see what Carl had to say, because he said it was an annoying game, and in a way for me too, because you felt kind of comfortable 4-2 going into the third period, and they kind of let the Caps sneak their way in. And then, you know, at the end with Lindgren pulled, you still kind of feel confident. But with a guy like Ovechkin on the ice, you know, all he needs is one look, and we're going to overtime. So it was probably a little rougher than you thought it might be. But I think that, again, the Rangers are doing, you know, what they have to do against an inferior opponent. And I think that, once we start getting into the second or third rounds, they're going to have to up their game. I don't think this is going to be good enough. Not that it hasn't been, you know, just fine. But I think, you know, They're going to have to up their game a little bit. They're going to have to make some adjustments and improvements as they go on into the playoffs. We'll take what we got here. 2-0 is great, kind of what you expected. Tonight was maybe a little harder than I expected. The Caps, were able to find a way to claw back into the game and make it tight at the end.
All right, let's find out why Carl was annoyed about the game, and we could discuss it. Let's go to Carl. Your thoughts, bro, and then let's have the conversation, man.
Yeah, listen, I think we all expected, Washington to, down 1-0 and trying to, get some footing in the series, present a bit of pushback tonight, and I thought that they did. To be honest with you guys, if I were to strip away the special teams part of the game, which I know is a really big factor in how the game sort of, played out on the score sheet, I kind of thought that Washington played better. Maybe that's just sort of my view of the game, if I took that part away and just looked at the game just sort of straight up. But, the one thing that has, and I talked about this last week, and I think the officiating had a real effect on the way I had to view the game tonight, because you watch the game Sunday afternoon, and basically if you took a breath on somebody, you were going to the box. And then tonight was basically like prison rules out there. You're seeing guys basically getting tripped, getting hit from behind, all this stuff going on, and we're just sort of just letting all of this go. Now, if that's going to be the case, okay, I guess fine, but that sort of plays a role into it. I remember last week we were talking about, like, hey, like, tell me how the game is going to be officiated, and I'll tell you kind of, where this sort of leads to. And tonight, that kind of soured me on the game. And, the Rangers were just, it's almost like they were just trying, they played relatively well. The bottom six, I thought, played, they had a very strong game tonight for the second consecutive sort of balance up and down the lineup. Nobody has really stood out the first two games and say, all right, you got to get him less time. In the third period, that sort of like last 3 minutes of the game where it sort of, resembled a goal line stand, because it seemed like the Rangers could never get the puck out of the zone for the last 3 minutes of the game, and they were just sort of, pinned in defensively. And maybe your expectations of, both of these games probably have been like, 5-1 clean, get these guys out of here as quickly as you can. That's probably how I was viewing the game sort of going in, but, you kind of have to temper your expectations a little bit that way. But, overall, listen, this will be now the third year in a row that the Rangers are up 2-0 in the last 3 playoff series now. If I remember correctly, I think the conference final, Tampa, last year, New Jersey, and now this. So the Rangers are kind of right back in the same position. But to me, I don't think the series really starts until Friday, because you need to tell me if the Rangers are going to what I'm looking for now is sort of like the maturity aspect of all of this. Don't go down to D.C., lose on Friday, and then sort of put this series sort of up in the air. I think if the team has evolved over time, and we believe that they have, but that's to be determined, then the Rangers should handle their business on Friday night, go up 3-0, and then end this series as soon as possible on Sunday.
Yeah, I think they will get a split in Washington. Whether it is Game 3 or Game 4, that's up for debate. If Washington did win Game 3, it would not surprise me. But I think more likely, I think the Rangers probably will get the split somehow. Hopefully it would be Game 3, and then it would be all the pressure on Washington to get the next 4. But tonight's game, like you said, Carl, you're right. It was prison rules out there, which I didn't mind to an extent. If you're going to – you got to call the penalties, especially the blatant tripping penalties that we did see tonight. That was kind of quite obvious from afar. And Ranger fans reacting as it happened, high-sticking. We saw that. No calls for that. But, it got really chippy out there. Will Cooley, Tom Wilson, TJ Oshie, Timmy Panarin. But – outside of that, and these two teams, we all know this. I mean, they've played each other so many times. The core of this team, and the fans especially, know these rosters so well. It was kind of to be expected, so I'm not really surprised there. And I get what you're saying. I agree with you. Listen, I agree with you as far as however the game is going to be played, let it be played the way it needs to be played, but at least call the penalties that are really blatant. But I do want to speak on to the point, and I'll go back to Glenn, on the execution of the Rangers' scoring opportunities, especially on the power play. And I understand the argument or the angle as far as 5-on-5, but the Rangers, they earn the right to get those power play situations because they've made teams get penalties. So that they're rewarded with the one-man advantage, and they cashed in. And I thought that, I'll go back to Glenn on this, I thought the Roslovich goal, I didn't even think that went in. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was a great shot. And at first sight, I said, no way that didn't win in. And it went in. But the Rangers execute on their power play. Now, the penalty kill was a little shaky tonight, Glenn, if you want to speak on that as well. But it was really negated, especially with the shorthanded goal, all set up by the great passing with Mika Zibanejad to set up Keandre Miller. What are your thoughts, Glenn, on the special teams tonight, the 5-on-5, exactly what Carl was talking about as far as how the games were called tonight in particular? And how do you like that type of style? And extend your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I'll just mention what you said. That Rossovic goal, that was a great shot. And if you remember, he carried the puck in down the left wing and then passed it off and then went around the other side. And Sam Rosen was confused, too. He didn't know if it went in either, and I didn't. But when you saw the replay, I mean, he had hardly any room to fit that in. And that was a great shot by him. As far as the penalties go, I mean, in the first game, I think there were, six penalties called in the first period, and it kind of affected the flow of the game, as it usually does. But then I think there were only, two more the rest of the game. So the referees kind of backed off a bit. And I think I remember, and I was feeling the same way. I think Lundqvist said after the first period of game one, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, let the boys play. Stop calling every little picayune thing. Tonight we got that. I mean, tonight was almost kind of a throwback game to me. They let them play. There were a number of penalties called. Obviously, there were. I mean, I can think of three penalties. Mika, I think, got tripped blatantly in the first period, and then obviously there was the high stick on open ice against Panarin. I don't know how they didn't see that. And then right off the faceoff when Wilson gave Cully an elbow. I mean, the cameras were watching the two of them, so I don't know how the referees weren't. But, tonight was more of a game of, let the guys play. And I don't mind that. I don't like, games that have 8 or 9 power plays. It just makes the game very choppy. And I thought tonight had good pace, good flow, both teams. As far as the Ranger power play goes, they scored 1 or 2 on the power play. I thought they did their usual good job of kind of moving the puck around, kind of baiting guys like they usually do, kind of holding on to the puck and having a defender get a little impatient and kind of move out to him and then just move the puck to somebody else. So I thought they did a good job there. The PK, it's funny. I mean, the first couple of kills that the Rangers had, I thought they had the better chances. I mean, they were getting a couple of 2-on-1s and, they were streaking down the ice. And I thought that, in the beginning, the PK was pretty good. Then, later in the game, I thought there were a couple of kills where, they could have done a better job trying to get the puck out. I mean, Washington got the one. I thought that the PK was a little inconsistent today. It was good early and not as good later in the game. Tonight to me, I would rather see a little bit of feistiness go. I loved seeing Panarin get fed up with Oshie, who had been harassing him the whole game. I mean, that might have been the best check Panarin has thrown in his career. I mean, it wasn't much, but, for him, that was pretty good. Tonight, to me, Sunday didn't feel like a playoff game to me. I don't know if it was just, I wasn't nervous on Friday. I wasn't nervous on Saturday. Maybe I was just feeling a little too overconfident. Saturday, and I kind of have an aversion to day games anyway. I prefer night games. I have trouble getting into afternoon games. But tonight felt like a playoff game. And I think part of it was the fact that the referees, you know, called the penalties that they had to call, missed a couple, but basically let the guys play. And for me, you know, an old-timer like me, who goes back to, you know, the 80s and even the 70s, I don't mind that at all. So I don't know how you guys feel, but I didn't mind it at all.
I agree with you, Glenn, on that.
Didn't mind at all.
That game, the Ranger game Sunday, and the Boston game that happened on Saturday, both of those games were eerily similar just how sort of quiet the game was. By contrast, the Florida-Tampa Bay game, I think they tracked it after the game. I think that those teams came out, I think, for 105 hits in the game that, in the first game that they played out. I mean, they're playing tonight. I'll have to check what the numbers are. But that game had far more intensity than the other two games did. And then I saw the Vegas game last night here. You know, that one had a lot of stuff going on there as well. So it seems like depending on the game in the series, there is a different feel to the way some of these playoff games and series have been going.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like it's a game-to-game adjustment between games one and two, especially like you said with the Toronto-Boston game. And kind of like how everything went from game one to game two for the Blue Shirts and the Capitals. But I do want to say this, and it goes without mention, and I know Panarin got the goal in game one, and he was quiet tonight with no shots on goal. I know he had a good opportunity. He just missed the whole entire net. But if we're going to, you know, if he's going to be kind of I would call it harassed, I guess shadowed by TJ Oshie all over the ice as a forward to a forward type of defense pairing as far as him following over the ice. At least the good side of what I saw tonight, they kept Alex Ovechkin at bay as well. So I'm willing to live with those type of situations if it's going to be like that. For instance, Panarin wasn't really a factor offensively, neither was Alex Ovechkin. So I'm cool with that. You know what I'm saying? Like if my superstar or if our superstar is not going to really be offensively impacting like he should be, like his MVP candidate season this year, at least the greatest of all time, is at bay as well. Do you guys understand or agree with that notion as far as Ovechkin being really quiet tonight? Yeah.
Yeah, it sort of canceled itself out, Glenn. I don't know what you think. I'm looking at the first two games. Ovechkin's got one total shot on net, or shot on goal, I should say. Overall. So, you mean you take that any day of the week?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if you're going to cancel out Panarin and we can cancel out Ovechkin, the only thing I would say is you want to have Panarin have a little bit of success, just for his confidence after, all the criticism and everything he's got for the playoffs. But for this series in particular, I'll take that trade-off because the Rangers supporting cast is much better.
Stronger.
I mean, Washington, if Ovechkin isn't going to be able to contribute, Washington doesn't have the offense, the other offensive talent to pick up the slack. So, I think the pressure is on him. I mean, what, he got no shots on goal in the first period, in the first game? And, Carl, did you say he only got one in this game?
Only one. Yeah, according to the thing, only credited with one.
Yeah, and he had no shots for, I think they said, only the fourth time in 148 playoff games. In game one. So, I mean, yeah, you'll take that trade-off in this particular series, but I don't want to see Panarin, kind of question himself or, feel the pressure. But for this particular series, yeah, I think so, because the Caps don't have the offensive firepower to match the Rangers as you go down the roster. So, yeah, I think that's fine
the key
for the
series. And the key words, what you're saying, Glenn, in all this, this particular series, because
right, exactly.
If there had been other opponents, then you're, like, here we go again, Panarin, delivers in the regular season, no clue. But when you have literally the greatest goal scorer in the sports history, and he can literally go, this conversation could change in the game three or game four. Ovechkin's that deadly that he could get back, on the board, even just with shots on goal or goals scored. when he's on home ice, you know, like this could rapidly change. So, but as far as this series and to this point, I am willing to live with that right now, because I guess the difference, honestly, when you compare last season versus the Devils versus with the Capitals, because Vetchkin's a winger. He's one of the greatest slap shot guys ever, right? Versus a guy like Jack Hughes last year, where he could control everything from the middle of the ice as a center position, you know, the puck handling and creating and everything like that. So, yeah, Glenn, the words you're using, and I agree, this particular series, because the Rangers could get out in five, like Carl said, the whole thing is let's not make this a long drag out seven game series. Let's get this thing done in four or five as quickly as possible. And if Panarin only gets, let's say, one goal because of the game one, but we move on, I'm okay with that. And let's see if we could get back to that point, because there's probably no perfect formula with all this. You know what I'm saying? Unless Panarin goes on a scoring spree in games three and four on the road. But if we could keep Ovechkin off the board, that really increases our chances to win. Because, like you said, outside of him, like, they're a shell. That team's a shell of themselves, what they were 2014 through 2020. You know what I'm saying?
It's a no-win situation for him. You know. I was going to say, it's a no-win situation for him. Let's just have a hypothetical world in which Panarin had, let's say, four goals in the series. Well, folks would then say, well, you know, you're facing a Washington team that's basically a bunch of bums, you know. Yeah. But if he doesn't score, it's what happened. So, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
It's a bunch of bums.
well, here's the thing, because I'll put it like this. It's about the cancellation. You said it right, Carl, earlier. If Panarin and Ovechkin can negate each other's, you know, their production on the ice, that's the wash. So then where are you going to get the other points from, the other players from the Capitals? I don't think they have the strength to do that compared to our depth on our roster. And I'm willing to trade, like Glenn said, I am willing to trade that off for this series if we could keep Ovechkin at bay. As long as it means us moving on in five, we'll figure that out in the next round if we'll get there with Panarin. And if he did struggle in games three and four, or in three, four, and five, let's say the Capitals get one game and stuff. So I'm willing to live with that. I am. Because I do not want a long drag out series, because that just adds on mileage to the playoff skates. It just adds on whatever team we may have to face in the next round, go through that, even though we do have home ice, and the home ice seems to be effective this playoffs thus far for both the basketball and the hockey. What are your thoughts, Glenn, as far as the Zibanejad? I mean, he's been playing well, you know, picked up the slack as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think everybody has had their moments in games where they've played well. So, obviously, the first line in game one, I'd like to know the last time that the three members of a team's fourth line were the first, second, and third stars in a game, and they deserved it. That wasn't a fluke. Now you got Zibanejad, you had Panarin score a goal in the first game. I think the third line has been pretty effective. You had Brentby obviously score a goal. They're getting the scoring from different places, and I think Mika tonight especially looked really good. I think that whole line looked good. Obviously, Rossovic got the goal. I think right now, we're getting contributions from every line, which is what you need in the playoffs. I think that, as I said earlier when we came on, they're doing, and you said, Steve, they're doing what they have to do to beat this team. But if you're going to beat a Carolina or you're going to beat a Florida or wherever it may be down the road, they're going to have to be better. I don't think this is going to do it. And I think they can be and they will be. But, I think right now they're just, doing what they have to do. And if Friday night, if Rangers lose 3-2 and Ovechkin gets a hat trick, are we having a different conversation? Maybe a little, but I don't know that, I'm going to fear that the series is in doubt. Right now, I think I'll just take the trade off and, I think the Rangers have a lot more firepower to get through this series. And you guys know, I've been saying since probably the beginning of March, this first round, whoever they, you know, wound up playing, you want to make quick work of that, because how many times have we seen this team run out of gas if they get to, you know, a conference finals or something? We've seen it happen numerous times in the last 15 years or so. And I always feel that the key to winning a cup is, especially that first series, if you're playing a team that's, you know, not nearly as good as you are, you gotta get that series over quick, because you need to save that for the remaining series to make a long run. And I think I've been saying that since March, and I think it's imperative that they do that.
Cool,
you
man.
Know,
Carl, anything else?
This.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and Glenn, I don't know if you agree with this, because as I was watching, you know, since the basketball was on last night, but I also have the Islander-Carolina game. And watching their first two games in contrast to the Rangers' first two games, it seems like both teams, actually, and since we're sort of kind of leading up to this, like, Titanic showdown, like we're just sort of biding our time, both teams, till we get to this point, it seems like both teams are just kind of just doing what they need to do to get by. Now, listen, the Islanders clearly blew the game last night at three nothing to go down and lose the game, you know, 4-3 and then 5-3. But I think in both cases, like, neither team is really playing at optimum, you know, level, which I guess might be expected if you're looking at it from a standpoint of maybe both teams are, I don't want to use the word looking ahead. That's not the right terminology. But I think in the back of each team's mind, like, they're all looking towards the next thing, and the Islanders and the Capitals just happen to be speed bumps in the way, and almost like a piece of gum on each other's on their shoe. And all right, they're going to try to get through the series as quickly as they can, as you know, without expending as much energy or playing as at the, you know, 9 out of 10 level that you would like to see. And that's probably what's going on here in both teams' cases.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, Carl. You know, I think, I mean, I'm glad Scott isn't on tonight, because I will say to you that I was really disappointed that the Islanders lost game two. Because I want to see that series, you know, go a little longer. But for the Islanders, I mean, what a devastating loss. Not just that they blew the 3-goal lead, but how they blew it in the third period. I'm very interested to see if they can bounce back from game three, but that's such a devastating loss. But yeah, I think from Carolina's standpoint and from the Rangers standpoint, you want to get these series over quick, because you look over on the other side and, you know, there's a good chance that Florida and Tampa and Boston and Toronto are going to go 7. So, you know, that's great. Let them beat each other up. And, you know, if the Rangers can, and I'm sure Carolina is thinking along the same lines, if we can get this series over in 4 and 5, it will help us as we go on.
I will say to this, and then we can move on to the rest of the league. Shesterkin, I thought, was pretty solid in games 1 and 2. Keandre Miller, you know, that first goal to McMichael. Keandre Miller always does this. He's kind of like the culprit of why we give up the goal or whatever. It's been like this ever since we brought him on, since Wisconsin, right? He makes a bad defensive player along the boards, and he doesn't finish the check, and it causes a team to get the opposing goal, and that's what happened with the first goal. But he'd actually played well ever since then defensively with his poke checks, because of his long arms, and also of him as a trail guy on the shorthanded goal with recipient of the pass from Zibanejad. I thought Keandre Miller, he does this. He'll have a bad start, and then when he's focused, he makes up for the bad start and then some. I thought he had a good game. Barkley Goodrow, I thought, had an excellent game tonight. I thought he was very well as far as being a pest out there, and it really disrupting thing in the neutral zone, and it really created a good scoring opportunities as well during on the rush. You know, outside of that, defense, I think this was more, they got the lead and they kind of went 2012 to 2015-ish with the blocks. There was a lot of blocks. The last part of the game was more about them trying to get off the ice. They were tired because of the one-man advantage. They pulled the goalie, but I guess the words were saying they did what they needed to do, and now they're going to take the series down to D.C. Glenn, any final thoughts on the blue shirt side of things? And then same thing with Carl before we go around. We can just, I don't know if we're going to laugh, cry, or what the hell happened with the Islanders, but anything on the blue shirt side of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the NHL. I don't think you can, you know, I think back to 94 when the Rangers blew out the Islanders in four games and outscored them 22-3. I don't think you're going to see that kind of stuff anymore in the NHL. So, you know, you still have to respect your opponents, even if they finished, you know, 30 points behind you. You know, I mean, give Washington credit. They're playing how you would expect them to play. They're going to try to jam the Rangers up. They're not having, you know, total success in doing that, but they're trying to. You know, they're trying to press when they get a chance, and they've had their stretches when they've been able to press in the offensive zone. But I mean, for the most part, to me, the Rangers have kind of, you know, held that off and then kind of taken over the game for stretches themselves. So, you know, I think this is probably, you know, how you would kind of expect it to go. I mean, I would think that the Rangers could beat this team in four or five, but, you know, I wasn't expecting, you know, a bunch of 5-1 or 6-0 blowouts. So, you know, I think they're in a good place. I mean, you got the Caps now thinking we got to win 4 out of 5. You know, you know, as much as they're going to say we're going to take one game at a time and blah, blah, and all, you know, we know what we're going to hear. You know, in the back of your mind, you got to say, how are we going to beat this team 4 out of 5? So, you know, the Rangers are probably in their heads a little bit, and, you know, that's where you would want them to be after the first two games at Madison Square Garden.
Carl, your thoughts on the Blue Shirts before we go to the rest of the league?
Yeah, I think, you know, just as we look ahead now to Friday night, where I think the one thing now that I'm looking for is a just sort of a workmanlike, clean performance on Friday. If we can just get one of those in the series. I didn't think Sunday was, you know, Sunday was okay, but, you know, I thought, you know, we're looking now, I think, in terms of just the stylistic way of doing this, just sort of one game in the series where top to bottom, things just all are on the same page, everything looks clean. That way we can just, you know, get out of this series with a good feeling. Don't leave anything up to chance in game three. I think back to last year, you know, we were, you know, Rangers were up 2-0 to come back to the Garden. And I remember thinking, you know, they bring in, you know, Dulles bringing in the other goaltender. But I was like, you know what, I feel like New Jersey's going to give us something here tonight. I don't know if they're going to win. And all of a sudden we get to overtime. You're one goal away from going up 3-0. Hamilton gets the goal. And then all of a sudden things just, you know, something happened. You know, whatever happened the rest of the way happened. And that's why I'm pointing to this particular game, like, coming up here. You know, just get this victory here. Do it in workmanlike fashion. Don't leave anything to chance. And just give this team no life. That's, I feel like, I just don't want a situation where you're going into Sunday night with the idea in anybody's mind that the series could be tied. That's something that I'm not for at all. Let's not even just put that in the atmosphere. Win Friday night, go up 3-0, and turn out the lights.
I hear that. Sounds good. Now, to the other series you guys were referring to in the Eastern Conference, we'll get to all the rest in the East and then the West. But, yeah, listen, I'm going to be honest. I saw on the side, I was watching Knicks Sixers yesterday, but I did have on the side when the Islanders were up 3-0. This is typical Islanders. They get off to great starts. But, man, I did not expect that when I found out they lost. And I was shocked. Not only lost, well, a regulation loss. You know what I'm saying? And up 3-0, especially in the second period. But it's the way they lost, especially in the third period. When I went back to watch the game, it was so quick with the bang-bang, especially off the face-off after they tied it at 3 and then center ice face-off and Martin Newt got the goal to come 4-3. I mean, Jesus Christ, Glenn and Carl. I mean, the Islanders, I think they blew it. I mean, not that they were going to win the series. Anyway, it's more about, could the Islanders make this a 6-7 game series? In this sport, it's really tricky because teams could get on a roll, but I don't know about against this Carolina team, man. I think the Islanders made this series a 4-5 game series because they blew this game too the way they did. Glenn, your thoughts, and then Carl on the Islanders, just the bad, bad third period in game two in Raleigh.
You know, I was flipping around too, Steve, and I saw the Islanders winning 3-0, and I was like, oh, all right, cool. I, you know, hopefully they can, you know, grab a game out of Carolina and go back tied, and that would be great for us. And then the next thing I saw was 4-3, and I was like, holy shit, how'd that happen? And I don't know, for me, for some reason I feel like 2 goals in, what was it, 9 seconds? I feel like if a team scores 2 goals in 9 seconds to go from 3-0 to 3-2, it's not quite as bad as if a team scores in 9 seconds and it goes from 3-2 to 4-3. It just feels like it's a dagger in your heart where you're leading and then all of a sudden 9 seconds later you're losing. I mean, that's just got to take, you know, the heart out of them. And like I said, I'll be interested to see how they play. I'm sure they'll come out storming and do their best. But, you know, Carolina is so much better than the Islanders, just as the Rangers are with Washington, that after what I saw yesterday, I'm having trouble even seeing the Islanders winning a game. But, you know, maybe they will. And, you know, then they've got the added thing of the Sorokin-Varlamov thing, which, you know, I feel like you kind of, you know, is different from Boston, where you got the two goalies that have been playing and alternating every game all year, and that's kind of the norm. And then, you know, you go with the Islanders, where, you know, they pull Sorokin, and then they go on a run at the end with Varlamov, and then you go into the playoffs where, you know, obviously Sorokin is, you know, their number one, their guy for the future. And now you're having to start Varlamov, and I think that's, maybe it means more to me than it does to the players, but I just feel like you don't want to go into the playoffs with that question in goal. You know, so I think that may be a problem for them too, but I don't see that if the Islanders win one game out of there, I think that's all we can kind of expect.
Right. Carl, your thoughts?
So it's interesting, right? So in that game, even though the score was 3-0, as I was looking at, I was like, oh, you know, how are the Islanders winning this game? Like, I don't feel like they're dominating in any actual way, but the score is 3-0, and you sort of wonder, you know, you sort of get that plan, and it sort of translated into the way the late game last night in basketball happened with the Lakers and the Nuggets. Like, you're looking at the score, but you're trying to figure out, like, okay, is this score sustainable? And so in the Islanders' case, like, they weren't getting a whole lot of shots. In fact, for the game, the Islanders only had 12 shots for the game. Just think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the math of 3 goals on 12 shots, that's 75% save percentage. Not exactly what you're looking for there, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
you digress. And Glenn, here's the thing. I always wonder about the psychology of the 3-0 lead, right? So once Carolina gets the first one on the board, and now you're going into the third period at 3-1 to 3-0.
Yep.
In your mind, you're now just thinking, hey, you've got 20 minutes here. If you just get one again and make it 3-2 at any, let's say you get a goal in the first, you know, let's say 10 minutes of the third period. Now all of a sudden, you've got the Islanders on their – or any team with a 3-goal lead. You got them on their heels now where they're thinking, you know, you sort of are trying to, like, you know, thread that needle between you want to try to be aggressive but at the same time don't want to be too aggressive, and you just allow the Carolina to dictate the terms. I think in the third period the chances and attempts were – I think the final was like 39-3 in the third period. It was
mm-hmm.
it was that crazy. And so eventually, and I think as it turned out, chances for and chances against, I think it was the final was 85-20. Like, it was some crazy number when you think about it. And so maybe in the end, Carolina sort of deserved to win the game just based off of the heavy volume, and the Islanders were just kind of holding on for dear life. And eventually, somewhere along the line in that game, it was just going to turn around and go Carolina's way. But, you know, hey, listen. When you're up 3-0, you're thinking, "Hey, listen, 3-0 is 3-0. You know, you don't want to lose that." But you know, as we saw in the Stadium Series game, I think we also saw it, you know, a couple other times with the Islanders this year. You know, even though they get up in some of these games, the chance of them holding these leads is always tenuous. And once again, you know, what you saw in the regular season translated here at the worst possible time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the shots, with the final shots, were 39-12 in that game.
Yes.
And you know, think back when you have a team up 3-0 or 3-1 going into the third period. What do you hear between periods of you know, the intermission there? You always hear, well, you know, we want to keep doing what we're doing. We don't want to lay back and just get defensive. We want to keep trying to force the play, you know, and I didn't see the third period, so I don't know how that period went. But then you always hear from the opposing team, well, if we can just get one in the first 7 or 8 minutes, you know, then we can get them on their heels a little bit, and then it's a one-goal game, and then, you know, anything can happen. You know, and you can, you know, you can dial it back to the Ranger game on Sunday. They went into the third period with a 3-1 goal, with a 3-1 lead, and you know, you're sitting here watching a game, hoping that, you know, the Caps don't get a lucky one and it's 3-2, and then we're sitting on the edge of our seat for the rest of the period. So
like tonight,
but right, like tonight, exactly. But in game one, the Rangers didn't do that. Kreider got that goal to make it 4-1, you know, late. And then it was like, ah, you can sit back and enjoy the rest of the game. But, you know, there's just that dynamic that you always hear from teams that are up 3-0 or 3-1 going to the third where, oh, well, you know, we got to make sure we don't, you know, sit back and play defense and let them come to us. We got to take the game to them. I don't know if that happened in the third period. I would think with 12 shots in the whole game, it probably didn't happen for the Islanders. But, you know, that's always – that's what you always hear, that that's what teams try to do if they're going into the third with a lead, especially
right.
against a better team, especially against a better team.
All right. So let's move on to the other games, which is interesting with the Toronto-Boston, the original six squads, where Toronto ties up the series 1-1. Boston clearly won the easy one, game one, but – game two, I saw where the Boston was up 2-1 and it took away the goal. And then minutes later, John Tavares got the goal to tie the score up on the power play. And then Austin Matthews scores like his 50 billionth goal of the season. I lost track. I mean, how many goals he's got? Like 73 this year? Whatever. It is,
70 now total. 70 now total.
On the break, you know, he's just deadly on the breakaway, which is crazy between these two particular franchise that we've been talking about, because Boston, you know, historic season last year, didn't even get out of the first round with Toronto. That was a whole existence. Like, can they get out of their first round? So are they going to go back? Who's going to get out of the first round between these particular two teams? Where Toronto, could they make it back-to-back years? Or is Boston going to be in the funk where, you know, these two, you know, will they lose again in the first round? So it's in a weird dynamic. They're both, for these franchises, are seeing a little bit of pressure to get out of that first round. But I think, no, I'm going to still say Boston in seven. Glenn, I just think Toronto has the firepower. We've seen them this season, of course. But I think when Boston plays their balanced game like they've had all season, I think they'll take care of Toronto. I think they've owned the series, Boston, if I'm not mistaken. Between Toronto, that not to say that means anything in the regular season, you know, but I trust Boston more than I do trust Toronto. What are your thoughts, Glenn, on the first two games in this series? I see that Tampa and Florida are in overtime. To be quite honest with you, I did not even see a lick of this game today. I've been watching the entire Ranger Cap. Your thoughts, Glenn, on these two series as well, and then we'll get Carl's thoughts.
You know, when I thought about the Boston-Toronto series, I kind of went against my normal ideals, which is, you know, goaltending. And, I mean, Boston's had fantastic goaltending for the last 2 or 3 years with Ullmark and Swayman. And Toronto's goaltending has been just up in the air, subpar, whatever you want to call it, right? But for some reason, I went with my gut, which is Toronto's got to get out of the first round one of these years. And as far as Boston goes, I'm not feeling it with Boston. Maybe it's just all the you know, the charity points that they got. When I look at their record, it's like, you know, they got so many points from losing overtime games and shootouts and all. And you know, as good as Boston is, I'm not feeling them this year. I don't know. So I kind of leaned toward, I think Toronto's going to win this in seven games. I think it's going to go seven. And it's just, it's more on my gut than in my head. In my head, I would probably say Boston, but my gut is telling me Toronto's got to win a first round one of these years. As far as Tampa and Florida, I'm really kind of bummed that they're playing tonight when the Rangers were, because that is one series I want to watch. And as soon as we're done, I'm going to flip over and hope they're still in overtime, because that is going to be a battle. Would I be surprised if Florida goes up 2-0? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I kind of would. They're in overtime. It can happen. But you guys know I spent the whole month of March and early April wanting the Rangers to win the division and win the President's Trophy so they could avoid Tampa in the first round. So, I was afraid of them. But I think the Panthers are going to knock them off too. And I still think even if Florida wins tonight, I still think it's going to be a long series. But that is one series I wish I could watch every minute of.
All right, cool. Your thoughts, Carl, on the other two games or other two series in the East with Toronto-Boston, the Battle of Florida. I know the high, Gary Bettman, and they always been trying to get that thing going. It kind of makes okay buzz in the playoffs, but they never really got it going in the regular season because, it's a fair weather market down in Florida with the Panthers. But your thoughts, Carl, as far as those two series in the Atlantic.
Well, in the case of this game tonight, we were talking about the hit number earlier from game one where they had over 100 hits. Tonight they've got 116 hits. Like these two teams are just basically laying the lumber to each other. Now, whether the series goes long enough to where, there's going to be one person standing, obviously there will be, but, how much one of these two teams has left just based on just the pure attrition and the volume of what you're seeing out there in both cases. The Sunday game was tremendous. Tonight's game is seemingly, living up to the same ideal as it did back on Sunday. So, if this series goes seven games, I whoever wins this series, I believe will go to the conference final. The Boston thing is I want to talk about them in a second because Toronto, I thought, showed a lot of heart in the game last night to be able to, when they were down 2-1, when Pastrnak gets that goal, it would about 6 seconds to go in the period, in the first period, because they went up 2-1. And at that point, because to that point, Boston had beaten Toronto all four games in the regular season, and the game one that was on Saturday basically resembled everything you saw in the regular season, between poor penalty killing, the big guys not being able to get goal scoring, suspect goaltending, like all that stuff was swirling around. And the fact that Toronto got that game last night to get themselves into the series, I think now both teams can kind of settle in and play it out. I think it's going to go seven. They'll be back at TD Garden for a seventh game, and then you'll see if Toronto can finally exercise the demons there. But for Boston, so they've been doing this goalie sort of swaparoo basically every game this season. They had Swayman go in game one, Allmark go in game two. They're going to go back to Swayman again in game three. And I keep wondering, I think we were even having a discussion during the season about, Quick and Igor and, potentially, trying to split time between these two. And I keep wondering, in the case of Boston, is this method sustainable? Boston did this last year, but then in the postseason, they went away from it. And they opted to go with one goaltender for the first six games of the series, and then switched course in the seventh game that they ended up losing. So now this time they're going back to the one game, one game here, one game there, and just playing it out this way. And Glenn, you're probably more of a historian than I. Oh, okay, there, that's a game winner right there. Have you seen a situation where a team is basically to win a Stanley Cup alternated goaltenders throughout a postseason? I can't recall it at all.
I can't remember that either, Carl. And I don't know if the numbers would back me up, but I think, maybe in the early mid 70s, the Rangers might have gone a little back and forth with Jokinen and Villemur, but I don't know that it was a strict alternating games. I think it was just, they kind of felt that they had two kind of co-goalies, and if you know, one guy lost, they could throw somebody else in and get just as good of a of an effort. But as far as being, you know, a strict alternating goalies, nothing comes to my mind where I can remember a team trying that now.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but that just seems to – I just feel, you know, listen, they've gotten the team to buy into this basically for two seasons, but I feel like there would be a team dynamic at some point where eventually just over the course of a playoff series, you're thinking, all right, this guy's got it. Like, let's stick with this as opposed to, all right, we're just going to alternate and just let the chips fall where they may. But, you know, hey, listen to you. You know, they'll have to live with the result at the end.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was unfair last year, what they did to throw Swayman into Game 7 after going with Ullmark in the first six games. I mean, I thought that was, you know, pretty crazy for them to do that. To, you know, although he was really good, I mean, I don't know if they won the Jennings or the Vezina trophy last year together. I mean, their goaltending tandem was tremendous. But, I mean, to expect a guy to throw him into a Game 7 when he hasn't played in 2 weeks, I thought that was really unfair.
Didn't Pittsburgh do that with us 2 years ago with Jari? Didn't the broccoli and what's his name guy?
Well, and they had Casey DeSmith too. I think we saw all three goalies in that series, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so it was
right.
Like all three. It was like guys kept getting hurt and they kept throwing somebody else in there, but. Yeah, I think we saw all three, but you're right. I think they came back with I'm trying to think. Was it the Smith or Jari that they came back in Game 7 with?
I know Jari started Game 7 for sure.
Right, Jari started Game 7, but he started the series and then he got hurt, right? And then the Smith came in and then he got hurt and then Domingue came in or
I don't
remember. I mean, actually Louis Domingue played in Game 1, the triple overtime game, didn't he? So maybe he was the backup.
Yes, he
at
did.
That time.
Jari was hurt coming into the series, and then.
All right, so maybe we didn't see DeSmith. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can remember what happened in 1970, and I can't remember what happened 2 years ago.
I think Florida won. I gotta go back and watch. Go back to that. But what's your question, Carl? Before we get to the West.
I was just going to bring up the West because on Sunday, you know, we talk about the importance of goaltending, and you know normally and one thing we're talking about last week is like sometimes you're going to need to get a game in which you know your goaltender doesn't perform well and your offense can kind of bail you out, and the fact that that Colorado Winnipeg game, in which you know Hellebuck gives up six goals, but because Georgiev was so awful, and I mean the worst. for Colorado to the point where the Winnipeg fans were chanting pull the goalie sometime in the middle of the second period at the point it got so bad that we're like okay this guy can't just be in there and I don't know what they're going to do now the rest of the series with that situation. I haven't tuned into that game just yet to see what's happening, but I feel like Colorado offensively and defensively they have a team that should be able to go deep in the postseason, but unfortunately, with goaltending like that, like you basically have no chance at all to win.
Yeah, I mean this is a team that won the cup with Darcy Kemper a couple of years ago. So you figure that goaltending is not you know that big of a deal that they can win with that team is so good they can win with an average goaltender. But if you're a player on Colorado now, after that game the other night, you got to be wondering, geez, what do we got to do?
Darcy Kemper was not that as bad. What I saw out of Gorkiev in Game 1, he was terrible.
No.
Man. He was bad.
No, not at all. But I'm just saying a mid-level goaltender, and they won the cup.
Yeah, so I think Colorado, if they could clean up the goaltending situation between Gorkiev and their backup, I think Colorado wins this. Winnipeg was getting really easy goals. I don't think that's going to continue to happen. I still think Colorado defeats Winnipeg. I think they, like you said, I think they're offensively superior to Winnipeg. Winnipeg was more defensive minded. They just happen to have a goal explosion due to a Gorkiev breakdown. Vancouver had a strong third period versus Nashville, and I think that game's on tonight as well. Vancouver went into the end of the regular season kind of in a mini slump, and then Nashville is a tricky team, you know, adding Ryan O'Reilly and those guys to the cast with the Predators. But I still think Vancouver can get past the Nashville Predators, probably in six or five. But Vancouver, despite them tripping into the playoffs the way they did, they have been, for the most part of this season, they've been strong in the third period as well. Now, then Edmonton and Los Angeles, I mean, they play so many times, like every year it seems, right, in the first round. It's a little different look because Connor McDavid is kind of more of the playmaker. He's a playmaker in general, but he's definitely taking the lead and let Zach Hyman do all the goal scoring on that line. He got 50-plus goals, and he had a hat trick the other night versus L.A., I think Edmonton still wins the series. That Drysdale had an excellent power play goal and a sharp angle in that game as well. I don't think nothing's changed. I think Edmonton beats LA. And then we were talking about it last week, and Carl, you're very close with the Dallas situation. Vegas is not your normal number eight seed. They're really not.
No, they are not. I told you.
I would be surprised. Vegas wins that series. I would not be surprised. That's a bad draw for the Dallas Stars, but Mark Stone, Marchessault, Carrier. I mean, they got so many guys. Jack Eichel. This is a strong Vegas team, and again, guys are dealing with injuries and getting guys back at the right time. But that should be an interesting series. So, Glenn, what are your thoughts on the Western Conference series? All four. Same thing with Carl, and then we'll go final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go Edmonton first. I mean, my question about them, again, was their goaltending. Stuart Skinner had a great year, but, this is kind of a first experience for him. But, that team is very top-heavy, but now they've added Zach Hyman, who scored 50 goals. He's been there for a couple of years, but the year that he's had with Drysdale, with Connor McDavid, with Nugent Hopkins, whatever you can get out of him, I think that team is dangerous because I think they can really outscore anybody, even as top heavy as they are. So I see them, probably beating the Kings in six. With Vegas, yeah, I mean, Vegas had a tough year because they had a lot of injuries. I mean, they had Pietrangelo was out for a long time. Eichel was out. Mark Stone, obviously, we know. Shea Theodore was out. I mean, they had a ton of injuries to key players. So, and Aiden Hill also was out for a while too. So, you would expect them to, kind of struggle through the season as they did. And as they got healthy, they were able to sneak in into the eight spot, I guess it was. And that's a tough draw for Dallas because, you look at the pedigree of that team. They are the defending Stanley Cup champions. They have a lot of pride. Originally before the playoffs started, I had, in my head, I told you guys at the beginning of the season, I thought Colorado was going to get to the finals and probably win the cup. But, as the season went on, I was thinking that Dallas had as good of a shot to get out of the conference as, Carl would know better than I do. But I thought Dallas would have as good of a shot of getting out of the conference, but they got a good chance of going out really in the first round. And that's kind of surprising to me. But what are you going to do? That's the luck of the draw. As far as the Jets, yeah, I mean, the Jets were built on defense all year. We talked about that, how they had given up significantly less goals than any other team in the NHL. So what happens? First game of the playoffs, and they give up six. I kind of think that series is probably going to get back to normal. I think that was an aberration. And I think that Colorado is still going to be able to come out of that series. They'll make the adjustments they have to make. And I think they'll be able to beat Winnipeg. But it could be a long series. The one thing with Vancouver, Nashville is no pushover. And the run they had at the end of the season to get into the playoffs, I mean, they got into the mix of, around, I don't know if they finished with 100 points, but, I think they were at 99 last time I had looked. So they were right around 100 points. And here's the thing with Vancouver. Demko got hurt again. Casey DeSmith is playing tonight. I don't know how long Demko is going to be out, but if he's out for, you know, a few games in this series, I could definitely see Nashville beating Vancouver. So, you know, we'll have to kind of keep a closer look on that. But with some of the veterans that they've got, Ryan O'Reilly and obviously Roman Josi, UC Saros is one of the better goalies in the league. If Demko is out, and he was for like the last month of the season, and then he came back for a couple of games, and now I saw he got hurt again. He's not playing tonight. I could definitely see Nashville winning that series against Vancouver, but you know, we'll have to see how that goes with Demko.
Okay, Carl, your thoughts on the West?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'll start with the Edmonton game last night. That was the one thing that I wanted to see. And offensively, they were buzzing really kind of from the start in those first 6 minutes of the game, and you know they kind of kept that going the rest of the way. I would expect LA to be able to. I would see that series. You know, I'm very concerned about LA. I think they'll get a game tomorrow. We'll get that game. Now after that, there's a very good chance I think Edmonton might be able to win the next three games. It's a very high probability of that, just based on the way the speed matchup that they've got and the advantage that they've got against LA. And it really sort of showed itself early on, particularly in that first period and throughout. As far as the Vancouver Nationals, I saw the first two periods of the game on Sunday, and then I had to call it a night, but I'm going to get a chance to watch the rest of it here. So I didn't get a chance to see much. I can't comment too much about that, but the one thing that I am paying attention to is to see how long of a series that goes. If you take a look at the mileage between Vancouver and Nashville, I think it's 2,600 miles, I believe, in terms of travel. And to do that this early in a postseason, just kind of going back and forth, and, you know, the 5.5-hour type flights going up that way, you know, just the attrition body-wise between the games itself and the travel, and to see what that might, you know, come about later on, depending on who, you know, which winner comes out of the series, to see what toll that takes. That's something that I would look out for. We've talked about Colorado, Winnipeg earlier tonight, and they're tied at one just now because Colorado just scored. And then, listen, I've been on this for weeks with the Vegas-Dallas thing. You know, the Vegas reminds me, I was trying to think of a reference to a past situation, and the closest thing I could come up with was like the year after the Rangers won the Cup, and they were the eighth seed, and they were facing Quebec. It was their final year before they relocated to Colorado, and the Rangers ended up winning that series. And it's the only reference I could give based on, you know, this was just a very unique matchup, and the fans here, they hate Mark Stone. The LTIR king, you know, ready to go back in the lineup and scores the first goal 2 minutes into the game. You know, you couldn't write the script. And you know what's interesting about the game last night? Through the first two periods, I believe Vegas had 11 total shots, but they had scored four times. Mm. You know, we've been talking about goaltending throughout much of the show between the Islanders, between, you know, Boston, Colorado, and, we saw with Dallas last night, like, you know, you get buried in some of these games just not being able to just stop shots. And, you know, sometimes maybe it's not the volume. It's just inopportune situation. And, you know, we'll see. You know, I'm going to be at the game tomorrow night, you know, to see if Dallas can get, you know, get themselves back, you know, in the series. Because my fear is that if Dallas goes down in the series 2-0, I do not see – them coming back against this particular team, even though Vegas' goaltending this year is not as good as what it was last season. But this is just – Dallas unfortunately got themselves in a situation against the wrong opponent. You know, usually you get a somewhat of a soft landing in the first round. Like last year, Dallas played Minnesota in the first round of the playoffs as a number one, as a two seed actually, and this year I'm fearing that it's just, you know, for as great a year as they've had, for as good a 3-year period, really, that they have had, so like a final, conference final, you know, a game 7 in the first round, you know, I think there was one year where they didn't make the playoffs in between that, but, you know, they've been a very good, you know, stable, you know, high-quality team for this period of time, and, you know, to not, you know, with a lot of quality players on the team. And my fear is that, you know, kind of like, you know, the Rangers were in that 2010 range where they were a very good team but just couldn't push and get over the hump. My fear is that just because of this particular matchup, that might be a similar situation. Now, maybe they can turn it around. They win game 2. They lost the first games of their playoff series in each of the first 3 series last year and came back to win the next game. So that's something that I'm looking out for tomorrow. We'll see. But the antennas are definitely up because Vegas is a legit position here to stop Dallas from going where they want to go.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. All right, let's get about 1 minute, Glenn, and 1 minute from you, Carl, as we wrap up, man. Good episode. Catch it up on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Our team up 2-0. Glenn, your final thoughts? Same thing with Carl. Then we'll wrap up. We'll pick it up again next Tuesday. I don't know if it's going to, you know, depends. But, yeah, we'll talk. Go ahead, Glenn, final thoughts.
Yeah, just to touch on what Carl said with Dallas, you know, he mentioned the 2010 Rangers, and I'll go back even further. I'll go back to the Emil Francis Rangers of the early to mid-70s. It was like they always got a matchup that they couldn't handle, or there was always a team that was just a little bit better than them. I mean, you look at those years, you're talking about the great Canadians before they went on their run in the late 70s, but they still had a lot of those Hall of Famers on the team. Obviously, the Bobby Orr, Espoo Bruins, and then, you know, into 74, 75 when, you know, the Flyers became the power and won 2 cups. So it's the same thing with those Rangers that Dallas is running into, and it's unfortunate because they had such a fantastic year. You know, they deserve to have a long run in the playoffs, but we'll see what happens. My final thought is Lindy Ruff getting hired by the Buffalo Sabres, and my head explodes.
Oh.
That's my final thought.
Oh, man. That is the Glenn on that final thought. Carl, your final thoughts, man.
Yes, I'm hoping at this time next Tuesday we are talking about a series being over. And not talking about, you know, or maybe we'll be talking about just closing the series out in game 5 and not be talking about a 2-2 series. That is not what we're here for. We are looking to, you know, kind of, you know, bring down the hammer here over the weekend. You know, everybody, there's nothing in particular that we're, you know, we're looking to see what the latest is on Filipino. We've been kind of talking about this a little bit in sort of drips and drabs over the last couple of weeks. He's been skating. Is he clear for contact? I thought I read that he was.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Okay, so in that case, you know, if the Rangers can kind of get through this series here quickly, maybe get an extra week because the other series don't end. All the series are obviously going to start right around the same time or a day of, you know, maybe a day ahead of time. But, you know, you get 7 days extra time on top of the series being over. All of a sudden, you're looking at the next series. You can then implement him into the lineup. All of a sudden, potentially, you know, we'll see how the medical, you know, staff, you know, clears that 100%. But if that's the case, it would be a welcome addition to the roster to be able to bring him in a situation like that and have him go full blaze. You know, because right now, what we're looking at a very balanced roster. You know, that's what we're looking for. We're looking sort of for a situation where nobody sort of sticks out as like a sore thumb. You know, as we've seen in previous years, previous Ranger iterations. So, you know, the more talent, the better. And let's, like I said, go into DC and get handle the business, you know, workmanlike, and get out of there cleanly.
Cool, man. Shout out to you guys, Glenn and Carl, myself. We'll pick it up on next Tuesday. And like you said, Carl, I hope we are in a favorable position to move on to round 2. And there's good talk around the rest of the league. We'll see where we are. Not just us, but the rest of the league by next Tuesday, and we have that discussion here on the Ring Podcast with Ranger Pro. All right, guys. Sangre su, ladies and gentlemen. Bleed blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
bleep blue, 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 bleep blue.